Warning, this podcast contains vulgar language, is not safe for listening to at work, or basically any reasons. Please proceed listening at your own risk. But really, what the fuck else would you expect from a podcast about snakes on a plane?
Welcome aboard Flight 121.
Welcome to episode 4 of Snakes on a Motherfucking Podcast.
Tomorrow night we get to see the movie.
And we're talking about having snake for dinner, so snakes on a plate. Local restaurant had a sign out saying they're serving rattlesnake.
We've had that before, though, when it really was just like meat.
What we had was rattlesnake and rabbit. It was like the snake meat wrapped around rabbit meat.
I think it was called like snake bite or something.
Yeah, it was interesting. A coworker of mine told me that he heard that all snake meat is just really the low cuts of meat of beef.
Really?
He said it's not really snakes on a plate.
Damn.
So I'm curious. We're going to call this restaurant and see if it's really snakes on a plate. Because if it's snakes on a plate, it's snakes in my belly.
It was way too tender to be low cut of beef.
It was not tender at all.
It was
tough as shit.
Was it?
It was like chewing gum. It was like shoe leather.
The rabbit was soft. Because rabbit is good.
Yeah, but this snake that we ate a couple years back, man, that thing was a chewy son of a bitch. It did not want to be our food. I think certain things just weren't meant to be eaten, and snakes, given by how many fucking ways they can kill you, I think we are the prey in that equation.
That could very well be.
Especially if we were, you know, airline food for them because they were on a plane.
But they're not eating, they're just killing randomly.
Well, I'm sure they're eating what they kill, don't you think?
Not all snakes eat what they kill.
Well, then why would they kill?
Because they can, or they feel threatened.
That is true. We had the Snakes on a Plane exclusive sneak peek DVD from Circuit City.
Circuit Shitty.
And it was interesting. It didn't have a whole lot of information.
Perhaps the biggest thing we got out of it was that the lady from Kingpin,
who Woody Harrelson had to go down on, the really nasty lady.
She is the stewardess, and I'm guessing by the blood on her, she got bit. Her name is Lynn Shay.
She was also in Dumb and Dumber as the bus driver.
No, she was not the bus driver. She was a lady who owned some dogs that she was going to show, and Harry, with his business Mutt Cuts, took the dogs for some hot dogs and sausages and got mustard and ketchup all over the dogs, and she was ticked.
Didn't she drive a bus at one point, though?
That was... Oh, you know what? I am thinking of a different movie. She did drive the bus in Dumb and Dumber.
Thank you.
It was in the original Dumb and Dumber movie that she was the Mutt Cuts lady.
What? No.
What was that?
Well, maybe, because it was a Farrelly Brothers movie.
Yeah.
She's also in There's Something About Mary as the owner of that fucking dog.
Puffy. Yeah, but in Dumb and Dumber, she was not just the bus driver. I think she was in on the whole scam.
Yeah, she was a cold... Don't watch this fucking movie. Other than, like, 30 seconds with Bob Saget, it's just a...
There's shit all over my bathroom!
Yes, exactly. There's shit all over that DVD.
It is a bad movie.
You know what's gonna be a good movie?
Snakes on a Plane?
Snakes on a motherfucking plane. I cannot wait. I'm going to smuggle a recorder in there to record some crowd reaction. Not a camcorder, because that's piracy. Piracy is wrong. Go to fucking jail for piracy. You know, you can kill a hooker and be fine, but if you want to record a movie, you're going to jail and serving hard time. Getting fucked up the ass for 3 years. Not worth it for Snakes on a Plane, because I got a prediction. Snakes on a Plane will hit DVD before Christmas. They have to capitalize on this shit.
Oh, yeah. They have to move before it dies down.
Yeah, I think it's looking at, what, an October, maybe a November DVD release?
I'm thinking November.
It'll be Snakes Under a Tree.
Yes, it will.
Now, you had done some research. Snakes on a Plane has entered the common vernacular of the slang.
Yes, it has. It is in the Urban Slang Dictionary.
And what the fuck does it mean?
Kind of like c'est la vie.
So,
what you could say is, fuck, my bitch, she left me. What can I do? Snakes on a plane.
Snakes on a plane?
Snakes on a plane.
Didn't it have some other uses, or was the only one pretty much like a shit happens?
It was kind of like a shit happens. What are you supposed to do? Snakes on a plane.
So, like, when my coworker today was bitching about all the work she had to do, instead of, you know, going, well, you know, everybody has busy times, I should just look at her and go, snakes on a plane.
Yes. Exactly. That's a proper use. Wonderful.
When, you know, we go to dinner and it's like a 60-minute wait, I just look at it and go, snakes on a fucking plane.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now, in the slang, if I want to have, like, shit really happens, is it then snakes on a fucking plane?
You could, yes.
And if it's, like, referring to a person who's a real dick, is it motherfucking snakes on a plane?
No, that's more venomous than it should be.
Pun intended?
Yes.
Ah! I said earlier in an email to you that this movie's going to kick ass.
Yes, you did.
I thought that was clever. It probably wasn't.
It was clever.
I also want to bring you an update we got by email from a listener to what he calls Snakes on a Motherfucking Podcast.
Well, I thought this was spam because we get a lot of spam, as everyone does.
Spam! Da, 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 da. You can work from home!
Go ahead. Yeah. Anyway, it says dual vagina update. And it's, you know, kind of all kind of crazy capital letters.
Yeah, it's mostly lowercase. Only the word update is capitalized. Yeah.
And of course, if I see vagina in a subject, I immediately think it's spam.
I immediately think it's my girlfriend and I need to delete it before my wife finds out.
Well, of course.
Dual vagina means my girlfriend has a girlfriend.
Okay.
But what he's actually said is that he wanted to research the two vagina debate that we had a couple nights ago.
I'm sure that's fun for anybody who checks his history.
I wonder if he was at work typing in dual vagina. I had a bad enough time. I was searching for Barbie at work today and did an image search.
Why are you searching for Barbie?
For your father in a t-shirt.
Oh, for the...
Uh-huh, he wanted a Barbie silhouette.
So he called you?
Well, no, he called the person who ordered the shirts who works with me, and...
She cannot use the internet?
I thought I'd find it quickly, and instead I found something else really quickly.
Yeah, you can't search for certain things.
And that was with Safe Search on.
Yeah.
Alright, so he searched for dual vagina, and what did he find out?
Couldn't find anything about snakes, but he did find that kangaroos have three vaginas.
Wow, so...
They yeah.
Can, yeah, three, uh-huh. There's three happy kangaroos?
No. They also have two uterus. So I guess would they be two uteri? I don't know.
Uteruses?
I don't know how that works. I don't know the plural of my own body parts.
No one really knows what the third vagina is for. And he's glad that he hopes that his knowledge of marsupial genitalia doesn't freak us out too much. See, my mind's going to a different place. My mind is going to kangaroo porn. Stuffed in all holes. The kangaroo takes four men. Five men. One in each vagina, one in the ass, and one in the mouth. And maybe a sixth in the marsupial pouch.
Ew. You know the marsupial pouch is filthy.
Is the vagina the cleanest thing in the world?
No. Not a kangaroo vagina.
Exactly. They don't bathe. They probably got some consent going on up in that thing.
They may.
So yeah, I'm
and
just
make
picturing...
all the better, this is from Vic from London. So I imagine he's saying it in a nice English accent, so it sounds all smart when he's talking about three vagina and two uterus.
Well, you know, those Brits, they can cuss like a son of a bitch. I mean, cunt is their common term for a buddy.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
And they smoke fags constantly, and I'm not talking in an East L.A. kind of way.
East L.A.? Do you mean West Hollywood?
No, I mean East L.A. where smoking a fag involves a gun.
Okay, I think of East L.A., I think of Cheech Marin.
I don't think he smokes fags.
No.
Now, we sat down with the biggest star I think either of us will ever fucking meet.
Kenan Thompson.
Shut the fuck up. I'm talking about the man who has done such great work as...
Ron Jeremy?
Coming to America, and...
We talked to Arsenio? I don't remember that!
Shaft, and Deep Blue Sea.
Where he got killed by the shark.
That was... We were fucking stunned when that happened.
Yeah, that
because we thought it was a Sam Jackson movie.
That movie was kind of lackluster, and we're like, oh, it's got Sam Jackson in it. La-di-da. Oh my god, he just got fucking killed by the shark!
I think we actually rewound and watched it like six fucking times. You know what's great about that DVD? I watched the commentary, because it has a Samuel L. Jackson commentary.
And it ends right when he dies.
Yeah, you're like, I got nothing else to say. I'm done. You think he's going to survive snakes on a plane?
Of course he is.
Now... I also sent you a link at work today, because, you know, who the fuck wants to really work?
Work?
Now, you know that there's been a lot of scares going on in airlines. You can't take liquids on, things like that.
That's because America jumped the gun.
Well, the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, has released a statement. In response to a serious snake threat to international aviation security, the Secretary of Homeland Security has elevated the Homeland Security Advisory System threat condition to severe, or red, for all commercial flights from the United Kingdom to the United States, and to high, or orange, for all other international flights and all domestic commercial aviation. There are approximately 106 flights per day between the United Kingdom and the United States. Although numerous arrests have been made in the UK to disrupt and neutralize this threat, the Department of Homeland Security is taking a number of heightened protective measures to ensure the continued safety and security of our international and domestic air travel. The Transportation Security Administration will be implementing a series of security measures, some visible and some not visible, to ensure the security of the traveling public and the nation's transportation system. TSA is immediately implementing the following changes to airport screening procedures. No snakes of any kind will be permitted on a plane. Snakes are no longer allowed in checked baggage. This includes all pythons, boas, rattlesnakes, vipers, mambas, adders, and other known species of snakes.
Some limited amounts of snakes may be allowed if Samuel L. Jackson is traveling. Licensed snake charmers are allowed to have snakes in their check-in baggage only if the name on the snake charming license matches the one passenger's ticket. People whose name is Snake will be allowed on board, but only after a full body cavity search.
Snakes purchased in the sterile area must be consumed before boarding because they will not be permitted on board the aircraft.
Passengers traveling from the UK to the US will be subject to a more extensive screening process.
Some measures will not be visible to the public. In light of elevated threat level, the Federal Snake Marshal Service will provide expanded mission coverage for flights from the UK to the US.
These measures will be constantly evaluated and updated when circumstances warrant. DHS and its components have coordinated closely with the air carrier industry, airports, and state and local stakeholders to implement these significant but necessary security resources. The traveling public can assist these agencies in carrying out their important security duties by
packing lightly without snakes to facilitate easier screening.
Check with your air carrier well before your flight departs for information on when you should arrive at the airport.
Cooperating with TSA personnel at all checkpoints and gates because TSA security officers will be checking carry-on baggage for snakes at the gates.
Being attentive and vigilant to any suspicious activity.
So there you go. And I actually want to thank terminallyincoherent.com for this warning. This was great. I had a good chuckle at it because I send it to people. First couple paragraphs, you think it's fucking serious. If you don't notice, the website's terminallyincoherent.com.
Well, it's a shell for the government. Hello?
I actually think it's a shell for the Dharma Corporation.
It probably is.
So we sat down with Samuel L. motherfucking Jackson. God, I was stunned.
You were like a giddy little girl.
It was really, I don't know what made him so imposing. Is it the badass attitude he portrays in all his films and in person? Is it that he has more money than I could ever dream of spending? Or is it that he's a really big man who could probably kick my ass?
All of the above?
Yeah, probably. And so I decide to jump right in and ask him the first question at the table, because some of these reporters, they were monopolizing the previous guests.
It was some British guy who kept mumbling and no one else could hear him. And he had a really bad haircut. Did you notice that?
He did. So I asked the very first question and shoved my foot directly down my fucking throat. Because if you listen real closely, he's talking about one of the reporters' fear of snakes. I thought he meant he had a fear of snakes and then proceeded to make an ass of myself. The fact that I got up the courage to ask a second fucking question is balls beyond belief, let me tell you.
Why don't you just cut that part out?
Because I wanted to show I asked two questions.
Oh. But one was wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, I made an ass out of myself. I'm not going to edit
it. I was
going to
stop you, but you were too far into it. Because I knew who, I heard the whole conversation.
I was worried about microphones and levels, and actually I was kind of deafening myself with the headphones. It was really bad. So we'll go ahead and play the interview now.
On the floor.
You didn't trust you with the snake?
I love snakes, but I'm scared of them.
Okay,
yeah, you
got
to know your enemy.
I love snakes, but I'm scared of them.
Yeah, that's not
something very good.
Things don't go together.
It works.
So if you're scared of snakes, why'd you sign up for Snakes on a Plane?
Excuse me?
If you're afraid of snakes, why'd you sign up for a movie called Snakes on a Plane?
I never said I was.
Okay. I thought you said you
were. Listen, hidden East Huntsman has been a wrong person.
I signed up for this movie because it was a great opportunity.
I thought I'd work with Sam Jackson.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you were involved with this when Ronnie Yu was on board, so you've been tracking this project for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? Was it just a concept? The idea?
That's all it was, yeah. When I read Ronnie was doing it, I emailed him and said, what is this? And he goes, my horror movie about poison snakes on a plane. I said, loose? And he said, yeah. Can I be in it? He's like, you want to be in it? So, that was the beginning of it all. You know, and Ronnie left and I was still there. So it's kind of like, okay.
When was it? When was it? When you were first?
A long time ago.
Jesus.
It's over 2 years ago. You know, movie ideas come up and people start talking about them, and then, you know, you kind of go away and do three more jobs, and they call you and go, remember that movie you said you do? Yeah. Okay, we're ready.
All right, fine.
Let's go. We of the podcasting community and the internet have just taken this thing and run wild with it.
Oh, you're one of those people responsible for
it? Yes, we are, unfortunately. Sorry.
All right, no problem.
But what's your reaction to that? What do you think of it?
I think it's very cool. I think that without you guys, the movie would still be PG. And without you guys, it will still be called Pacific Flight 121.
Yes. And, that would have been a bad thing.
And no matter how much hell I raised or whatever, that wouldn't have happened unless you got on the bandwagon and helped me do that.
It's all just because we had to hear, why are there snakes on a lot of motherfucking planes?
No, because, you know, it should have been called Snakes on a Plane from the beginning.
That's, I mean,
that's the honest-to-God reason that I took the job. It's kind of like, I know what we're getting here. And they were going, well, we don't want to give too much away. I was like, excuse me. That might be the answer. Remember that other little movie you did, Freddy versus Jason? You knew exactly what they were getting there. Well, not, you know, movie bad guy fights movie bad guy. Come see.
Well, the funny thing is, I mean, I don't understand why Hollywood would be opposed to, you know, when you go into the room to make a pitch, it's like that one-line pitch. Why not just do that for the movie audience, too, and just say, this is what the movie's about?
Because somebody who wears a suit, who went to Harvard Business School or some other place, who thinks they know how to market movies and says something, we got to keep an element of mystery in this. We'll bring them in and then we'll see. Call it Pacific Flight 121.
It's mysterious.
Then we'll spring the snakes on. No, what? Asshole.
Do you like doing horror movies?
Yeah, man. Going to do another one Sunday.
Awesome.
Going to 1408, Stephen King's short story in London.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Are you a Stephen King fan?
Yeah, actually.
So that's just a really, really good short story, but it really expanded it. I guess so.
They're going to make a movie out of it.
It's pretty much a one.
Well, hopefully it won't be a three-hour movie. You know, it'll still be a good short story movie. Keep it short. Keep it scary.
Huh? Can you talk about how they've expanded in any way?
No.
Okay, fair enough.
How much input were you given on Snakes on a Plane? Like, creative input? Were you able to, like, go in and say, you know, different ideas that you might have had to punch up the scenes a little bit?
Yeah, but those are the things that we couldn't put in the movie.
Yeah, Keenan was saying he did a lot of improv. I was just wondering if he did.
Yeah, he did. We wanted to choke him for that too. Kept us shooting a lot. Just shut up. Say cut.
Yeah, we know you're funny.
Yeah. All right, we're not doing that movie yet. Okay. No, not really. There were things that I wanted to do, but knowing we were shooting a PG film, you couldn't do. And things I wanted to say that I ended up saying, because we went back to shoot them. That one line that the fans wanted was, you know, something that I stood there and said in the middle of the shoot anyway. And I kept saying to David, well, why don't we just shoot the stuff anyway so we don't have to come back?
Yeah.
You know, and David even had a great idea. He wanted to shoot the spoof of the movie while we were doing it, which would have been a fantastic idea. You know, just do one take where it's a spoof on what we're doing and then move on. And we'll have that for, you know, the DVD or whatever later on. But those people in those suits.
Oh, the same people.
Oh, man.
It'd be so much better.
Didn't quite see where we were trying to go with this.
Life would be so much easier without them, right?
But they always, you know, they always think they're smarter than us. And, you know, and the one interesting thing about most of us is that, you know, I've done like almost 100 films now. And majority of those people have only had their job maybe a year and a half. Maybe they've done 2 films.
Yeah, Hollywood's really changed. It's not a lot of older guys running it. It's young guys now.
Yeah, and young guys who...
They don't know the business.
Yeah.
Well, they're not audience friendly.
Right.
Let me put it that way.
As proactive as the fans have become in recent years, and not just in this film. I'm talking all the way across the board.
Yeah, sure.
Star Trek and sci-fi and things that are happening out there in the world all together. Is anybody paying attention to that? Do you feel like they're ignoring it and saying, oh, this is just a small group and it's just a fad for now and they'll go
away? Well, they were until this particular phenomenon happened. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are paying attention to how this played out and to what the fan interest is. And the result will be very interesting. If this film is successful because of it, then people will start to invite that kind of input. You know, they'll start, you know, having contests for one sheets and, you know, trailers and other things. We will put your trailer in the theater if, you know, da da da, you know. So, and eventually somebody or some kid will be smart enough to say, okay, here's my idea. I want to make a movie. And here's my idea for this movie. Write a scene for my movie. Mm-hmm. And people will start writing scenes for the movie. Okay, now that I picked the first scene, what's the next scene you want to see? And people will have a great kind of audience script that's created from that. And they'll say, okay, now that we have the script, who do you want to see in it?
Wow.
You know, and they'll start to do that. You know,
is that something you could see yourself being involved with?
If it comes down to that, yeah. You know, if it's a really great kind of concept and enough people get behind it and they make something that's smart and audience-driven, I think it'd be a great thing to, you know, do that everybody would kind of go out and see because they'd all feel like they were part of it.
A movie for people by people.
Yeah.
Like those books are really online. People will write
small chapters. Yeah. Exactly.
Same thing. Bigger scale, Disney.
Yeah.
Can you talk about those?
New Voyages is doing such beautiful stuff with Star Trek, and something like that could work across all genres.
Easily.
Can you talk about as the career goes that you've had, distinguished actor that you are, you make choices about what you want to do, and there's this group of films that you've made, smaller, intense, powerful human stories, and you make Snakes on a Plane, and you make, you know, Star Wars, and you do those kinds of things. Can you talk about how those choices get made when you're thinking about what do I want to do with this career that I have?
Well, that's not a real concern. I do a movie like this because it's the kind of movie that I went to see on Saturday afternoon with my friends. And we couldn't wait for it to come out so we could go and be freaked out and scream and yell and, you know, reach around the seat and touch somebody on the neck and then go, ah! And I find myself a lot of times reading scripts and remembering a particular movie that I saw when I was a kid that reminds me of. And I'll go, oh, wow, I need to do something like this because I remember how much fun I had going to see it. And a lot of times that's what movies are. They're just, you know, let's leave home on Saturday afternoon, stay in the movies all day, you know, because that's when they didn't put you out. They just kind of, you just stayed there all day long. I'd be in a movie and watch a movie 3 times. And that's the kind of movie that I want to do sometimes. I just want to be in something that's entertaining and fun and great for somebody's Saturday afternoon escaping. And then there's the great story that comes along that you want to tell with a great character on the inside of it. And that's fun and fine to do, too, as an actor, to stretch yourself and to give yourself a challenge as an actor. And that's all I'm really trying to do. And there's no plan for a big studio movie right here, an independent movie right here, whatever, because movies are ready to go when they're ready to go. So if the independent film's ready to go, then I jump into it. If the big studio movie's ready to go, I'll jump into that. Because, you know, I'll leave. I just did a small film in Calgary, Resurrecting the Champ. I'm going to do this film for the Weinsteins now, 1408. And after that, I'm doing a big kind of studio sci-fi movie called Jumper. It starts 3 or 4. So there's no plan. It's just that movie's ready to go. So you want to do it.
Having done that, I'll go.
What can you tell us about your character? Neville Flint, I love that name.
Neville Flint?
Yeah. What sort of, that's just great. What sort of guy is he?
You know, just a sort of, you know, rebel FBI agent who's been trying to catch this bad guy for a long time, and he's finally got somebody who's actually caught him in the act, seen him, and he's willing to go that extra mile to take care of this guy and get him. A guy who's not afraid of danger, who steps up to the plate when, you know, things are kind of hairy, is when he's at his best. Kind of fun, kind of John McClane kind of guy.
So you dealt with sharks in Deep Blue Sea, and
yeah,
you got snakes in this one. You got a Penguins movie I saw coming up. Sort of this animal
theme going. Yeah. Been killed by a velociraptor.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So, I've had my moments. My animal moments, yes.
Having done that and done Star Wars and Boondocks, and you're even in Marvel Comics in the Ultimates with the Avengers.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to them seeing if Nick Fury is actually going to stay black when they get ready to make a movie.
I would think so. Everybody's crazy about it. But what is your geek experience like from that? Like, how are they approaching you and
interacting? Nobody has. You know, I see Avi around a lot because we live in the same neighborhood. But, you know, and I kind of express my interest in... I always wanted to be Iron Man because he was like a rich dude and, you know, created this whole thing. He's not really kept as a superhero. He just creates stuff to make himself a superhero, as a rich guy. But, you know, Nick Fury would be great. I've been reading Nick Fury since, you know, he was a Howling Commando kid. I collect comics. I'm just like all these other people. I collect a lot of different comic books, and I read comics. I'm in Golden Apple, like, you know, twice a month. I collect Hong Kong films. Kind of geeky about that, too. I collect a little anime. Kind of geeky about that, too.
So this place would be great for you, but I guess you can't walk the floor.
I cannot go down there, man. It's like being in a, you know, crack house with no money.
You know, if you put a stormtrooper costume on, you can probably...
Exactly.
But dress up like Mace, nobody knows the difference.
They'll just say, man, you really
look like...
That's
an excellent costume. Like damn, where'd you get that mask?
Do you have a lot of collectible? You said you collect comics and so forth. Do you have a lot of other collectibles, figurines and so forth? Or are you...
No, just my stuff.
Just your stuff?
Yeah, just me. I got a lot of me's, you know.
What comics do you like?
What comics
are you collecting?
The only comics that I have that might be valuable I have the original Lone Wolf and Cub set from 1 to like 47.
Jesus.
Wow. And the original Big Magazine.
So you're serious about this? Yeah, that's good. What do you think is the best comic book movie ever made?
Best comic book movie ever made?
Or do you think we've not seen it yet?
You know, I'd have to go back to like The Crow.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, because I remember when I first read The Crow years ago, it's make a great movie.
Yeah.
And then they did.
Yeah.
What books are you reading now?
Yeah.
What books are you reading now, like current comics?
Last thing I read was the newest 100 Bullets.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Perfect. So you playing any golf since you're down here? I know when you were doing Deep Blue Sea... I know Tony pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah, I was in and out of here
Tell
all the time.
Yeah, you drive up and then drive back down to Rosarito.
Beautiful downtown Rosarito.
Rosarito, right. But you drive all the way up to like Rancho Santa Fe or something to play up there?
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah, I haven't played since I've been here. I had come down last night and then this day. I got a junket tomorrow in L.A. and then I'm off to London.
Oh, okay.
So I'll take my clubs to London and see if I can play Wentworth next week. While
You know, I got to ask, since you know Avi and since you're such a great comic fan, have you had any aspirations to maybe write some comics and get involved in the comic book industry more than just being a fan? No.
It's work.
No ideas for characters.
No, writing's work.
Rosario Dawson's got a comic book coming out, and she's just, you know, the other guy who's writing for her.
She's got a lot of time on her hands. I work a lot. I work a little more. How about that?
So I can't talk you into starting your own podcast here sometimes.
Nah.
I had to try.
Being in so many movies as you are, why are you so driven to work so hard? You've been in almost 100 movies. Why do you work so hard without the need?
Well, when I was an actor in New York and I was doing theater, I was always doing a play, rehearsing a play, and auditioning for a play. Actors act. When acting opportunities arise, you take them. And there aren't a lot of them. And I like it's the hardest job in the world. You know, I kind of go to work every day and kind of hang out in my trailer, watch TV, watch movies, send people out for sandwiches. And they call me to work, and I work, you know, 10-minute spurts, and I go back and lay around for another hour and a half, 2 hours, watch Just Judy, watch something else, you know, watch a couple movies, and they call me back to set, and I work for 10 more minutes. Why wouldn't I go to that job?
So how does it feel now that you're part of the Star Wars universe? I mean, being a Star Wars fan, is that just like a dream come true? Like, I'm a Jedi now. I'm like one of the most well-known Jedis out there. I mean, is it?
Well, sure.
How do you fathom that?
You don't. I remember sitting in the movie watching, you know, Star Wars for the first time and saying to myself, wow, how do you get in something like this? And having no idea. You know, just because I was a young actor in New York, just kind of doing theater and thinking that, you know, it's a long way from here to the movies. And then eventually reaching a place where I could say, in a setting like this or a television show, any directors you haven't worked with before you like to work with? Yeah, George Lucas, you know, he's doing the Star Wars thing. I'd really love to be in that. And somebody saying to George Lucas, this is a kid, you know, Sam Jackson wants to be in your movie. Yeah, right. And going to the ranch and meeting George and saying, yeah, I'll be a stormtrooper. I don't care. I'll, you know, put on that white helmet and run across the screen. As long as I know I'm in it, I don't care if anybody else knows. Yeah. Like, ah, we'll do better than that. Don't worry about it. And not really knowing what I was going to do when I got there for episode one. I hadn't seen the script, hadn't seen any pages. They just said, come to London. And I went to London, and they said, you had a costume fitting today. I went in for a costume fitting. I walked into the dressing room, and there was some Jedi robes in there. I was kind of like, whoa. This mine? This me? I'm a Jedi? Get out of here. You know? So, you know, it's like the biggest smile in the world. And to end up the way my character ended up and being as important as he was is like a real blessing and joy, you know, great about it. It's like he said, he didn't really know how I was going to fit into all this, but I showed up and I did the thing that I usually do. I showed up, I stayed out of the way until he needed me. I learned my lines. When he needed me, I hit my spots. And, you know, I didn't complain about not having anything to do, and I had more and more to do as things as time went on. And it
paid
off.
Paid off,
right?
Yeah.
Did you keep any secrets?
How about your relationship with David? Because I know you worked for him. He was the second unit director on the Sphere and Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah.
So how he devolved when you came?
Yeah, he almost killed me on a Sphere. Yeah. Let's see. My last shot on Sphere, my last underwater shot on a Sphere. We were down doing something. And I was with Dustin, and we hadn't been in our diving suits for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and. When they said action, I was down there kind of hanging out. When they said action, I made my first move, and I heard this click in the back of my helmet. And I thought maybe the safety diver was moving away from me and doing something. I looked around. But then I realized I couldn't breathe. It was like a straw that gets collapses. It was like... And the safety diver is across from me looking at me like,
what's going on?
He swims over, and we had this safety valve right here that he jacked another tank right into that, boom. And I'm like, okay, boom. Still not getting in the air, not getting in the air. And everybody's going. And by then, I'm always, you remember this?
What's that?
When I was dying on a Sphere, and I'm going, take me up. And what had actually happened was the valve in the back of my helmet had locked shut and let the air in, because it hadn't been used for a while. By the time it got me up and got the helmet off, I had taken a breath, so I had vacuum sealed it to my head. So they unlasted it. They couldn't get it up. I'm like, and then they snatched it off, and as soon as they snatched it off, the diver let me go and dropped me, and that's the second again.
All the way to the bottom again.
Crazy.
You know, you've been working with David on that until the poison snakes.
Yeah, no doubt.
But you think, maybe not.
Nah, I was okay. My agent had already taken care of it.
Get me this time, you know.
My agent made sure it's, don't put any snakes near him.
As a New York
guy, you were talking about your early career and stuff. When you're looking now and seeing some of the World Trade Center projects and being a New York person, how are you feeling about those kind of movies that are coming out, the projects that are coming out now about that? People are saying too soon, not too soon. You're New York.
No, stories that have to be told. Stories told from the perspective of the people who experienced it, hopefully. And they're sort of heroic stories. Interestingly enough, way back when World Trade Center happened, that was this really good script that I thought I was going to do called Ladder 66 about some firemen that were trying to rob the rob the Russian mob. But all of a sudden, they actually couldn't do it because of what happened in New York. But I think it's time for people to start healing and watching stories about that kind of stuff. And getting a better perspective on it.
Are you living there still?
I understand. Yeah, I have still a place in New York.
Yeah.
And my daughter's there too. So.
Yeah. All right. Thanks
yeah.
a lot.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for
having me. Very quick for me. Do you listen to any podcasts?
No. No. That was a podcast.
You must have been listening to you before.
Okay. I'll take that as a.
That's awesome.
That was the Press Yunkit with Samuel Jackson.
If it's a Yunkit, isn't it Yaxson?
I guess it would be Yaxson.
That sounds like something you do after too much binge drinking. So we'll be back tomorrow night, and when we're back tomorrow night, we will have seen snakes on a plane. We're going to end today by telling you a personal snake story. What is your worst snake story? She's unprepared. I didn't tell her we're going to fucking do this. Have you ever seen a real snake?
Yeah, at the zoo when they bring them out and they bring them to schools and everything.
You've never seen a snake in person, like in a yard or...
Yeah, I ran over one of the lawnmower once.
Snakes in a yard?
It was a big black snake. I was down at my dad's wife's house when before they moved up here. And she lived in the middle of nowhere out by this big, huge lake. And we're mowing the yard, and then there's this... I'm on the riding mower, and there's this giant black snake. And I think he was probably 6 to 8 feet long. He was huge. I mean...
He was taller than you?
I said he was 6 to 8 feet long.
So he was taller than you?
Yeah. He was really big. And, I mean, obviously, since this is an audio podcast, you can't see... I mean, he was, like, this big around. He was huge.
Big as my cock, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how, you know, he can even move. He's that big.
Okay.
And... I saw him, and he must have been in, like, a hollow of the yard, and I ran over him before I got a chance to move out of the way, because it's like, all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, shit, snake! Oh, whoops. And I went and told my dad, and he's like, well, it was just a snake. And then I also saw one when I was young out at Lake Springfield, and a horrible lake. I don't know why I was swimming in. I guess it was clean back in the 70s, and it was a water moccasin, which is poisonous.
Yep, that's the only poisonous snake we have in Illinois.
No, we have rattlesnakes in southern Illinois.
Well, all right, in this area.
Yeah, we only have water moccasins in this area. And they're sometimes called cottonmouth. And it came up, it was like a rocky area. There's like sand and then rocky areas on the side. And it came up on the rocks and it was kind of moving. And the girl who I was with, her dad went over and smashed it on the head with a rock, which I thought was kind of dangerous. And I don't even honestly know that it was a water moccasin. I was like 5.
So it could have just been snake in the water.
It could have been, but we really don't have that many water snakes here either.
No.
And then when my dad's dogs, he raises beagles, and the puppies will bring in the little garter snakes from the yard and play with them. I've seen that, and that doesn't bother me. I'm not really afraid of them, and I don't mind touching them. I mean, I see them at the zoo when they used to bring them out. They really don't freak me out.
See, when I was a kid, my earliest memory of snakes is seeing my mother mowing the lawn, and she got trapped by a snake. Because we had this little, like, cul-de-sac of our yard, and there was a snake there. And she called my dad, and my dad went out there, and I was real young, so I was watching from a window. I was probably 6. My dad comes out there and freaks the fuck out, comes running in the house, and picks up, like, a big, like, Freddy versus Jason axe. Now, why we kept the axe in the pantry, I still don't know to this fucking day. But we had this sharp, and it was, like, your classical, like, Paul Bunyan red and white axe. And my father, who is not a manly man, is kind of a... rotund man going out there with this axe and starts chopping the snake up, but he's coming actually closer to my mother, who's in this small corner. She's lucky she's still got 10 fucking toes.
Holy shit.
And then we'd had a lot of snakes because we lived right by a cornfield. My mom would be raking the leaves and find snakes. She'd pick them up with the rake and throw them on the fire when we could still burn, and we could see the snakes writhing and burning.
Hmm.
And then when we lived in Florida, every so often my mom would be fishing and she'd catch a snake. And it would be on the hook, and she'd bring it up and go, bait, cut its head off, and then put it back out there, seeing which fish should eat the snake head.
Your mom was kind of different.
But my personal story with a snake, I was still living at home, and I go out to get in my car. I was home from college, actually. And what's sitting coiled by the fucking car door but a snake, a big fucking black snake. I'm guessing 4 feet long, but he was coiled, and I've never seen a snake around here coil like that. So I go back in, and I say, Mom, there's a snake. Well, what the fuck should we do? So she has me go get my BB gun that I had from when I was a kid. So I'm out there, like, there's a snake 6 inches from my car on cement. Now, if a BB hits cement, it ricochets. So here I am taking aim with a BB gun at the snake. And it's kind of asleep, I think. It was sunning.
They do sun themselves because they are cold-blooded, and they do like to stay warm.
So he was perfectly happy resting when I shot him in the fucking head. And then he started rearing, and it was like in a movie. The head was moving all around, the body wasn't moving, he wasn't dead. So I had to shoot him again, and the head whipped back, and now he was pissed, and he had bloody gashes in his head. And I had to shoot the fucking head 6 or 8 times before it died.
Oh my god, how mean are you?
Well, I wanted my car. It was, I mean, it's not like I can snare a fucking snake off. I mean, the snake scares me off. That's how the world works.
Now, see, I grew up with a father who was literally scared to death of snakes. I mean, violently afraid of snakes. And if you got a snake anywhere near him, he would panic and run. And my grandfather was the same way when he was a younger man. I imagine my dad was little. A neighborhood kid brought him a snake when he was out mowing the lawn, not knowing that my grandfather was afraid. My grandfather twirled his lawnmower at him, just picked it up because he was so afraid, and started swinging the lawnmower around because he was frightened. I mean, my dad never could go to the zoo with us and just cannot handle snakes. If he saw one on the road, and I remember distinctly one time we were driving out to my grandma's who lived out in the country, snakes all over. He saw one on the road and he slammed on the brakes, backed up, squealed his tires over the snake, backed up, and did it a few more times, and the body's like flopping all over. And I'm not that afraid of something that I have to kill it. I mean, maybe I'm not afraid of snakes because my dad and grandfather are deathly afraid of snakes. My mom was not afraid of snakes. She was afraid of worms, but not snakes, which doesn't make any sense.
I'm more afraid of spiders than snakes.
It's because I've got some fucking scary spiders in Illinois.
I've got more arachnophobia than I have...
Ophidiophobia or whatever that is?
Ophidiophobia. Now, I'm going to end with a story. The coworker who I talked about a couple nights ago, who was like, Eric, what?! He was telling me his best snake story. He's deathly afraid of snakes. When I told him about how we interviewed Jules Sylvester and he was having just that milk snake, he's like, I'd have to fucking flee the room if there was a snake.
My dad would have. My dad probably would have upturned the table and caused all kinds of commotion and taken out 4 people on his way out the door.
Well, when Eric was in high school, he was mowing his parents' lawn with a riding mower. And he comes across a garter snake that was probably 4 or 5 feet long.
That's not a garter snake.
Well, right.
It's probably a black snake.
He said it was black.
Yeah, it's a black snake.
Oh, I didn't know there were...
Little garter snakes are little thin green ones.
Oh, okay. He said it was a big black snake. I didn't realize there was a species of snake called a black snake.
I don't know if that's what their species is, but they're big black snakes. We have them all over here.
Now, he was on a riding mower cutting the lawn, so the snake is fleeing. But he decides he wants to kill the snake. So he kicks it into high gear, and he starts zigzagging through the lawn, making all kinds of, like, Charlie Brown shirt patterns in the lawn with the mower going after the snake. And the snake's fucking running for its life, okay? It's getting chased by a mower. It doesn't want to be snakes in a blade. So he's focused completely on the snake and going as fast as he can.
So he's going about 5 miles an hour?
Some of them can get a little faster than that.
7?
But the snake was outrunning him a little bit, and then it moved to cement. And so he's following the snake on the cement, focusing on the snake, when, wham! He hit his dad's car full speed with the mower. Put a dent about 2 feet in the car. And the snake just ran the fuck off. It lived.
That's funny.
I like that story. So your story of chasing the snake with the mower, cutting the snake with the mower, reminded me of his.
Well, I didn't chase it. It just was an accident. I was like, oh, shit, snake. Ooh. You know, because you don't have time to react. I mean, he literally...
Now, did you kill his head?
I don't know.
Because, you know, the body will regrow.
No, it won't.
I've heard that the body's
regrow.
That's a lie. If you cut a snake in half, it'll live.
No, it
won't. You have to kill the head.
Are you thinking of, like, a mummy or a zombie?
No, this is...
I think you're thinking of a zombie.
I was told that if you cut a snake in half...
Who told you that?
It'll regrow its tail.
Who told you that?
Billy, when I was 6.
Okay, I think we find that. Wait, is he? No, that was Ian that he emailed you.
Ian emailed me, Billy burned down his house.
I burned down the house.
But he told me that if you cut a snake in half, actually he told me that you'd have two snakes because the tail would regrow a head and the head would regrow a body. But I realized that you can't regrow a head. But there are species that can regrow lost limbs.
I've got a unicorn in the backyard, if you'd like to see it.
Fuck you!
No, I believe...
Snakes on a plane!
I believe in small sections, and I will look it up on the internet for you. I believe that small sections of the tail can maybe regrow, but I don't think, like, the body can, nor the head. I mean, if a snake could reproduce its head, don't you think they'd have all the snakes in captivity studying them for amputees?
Huh, it turns out that's not true.
Yeah.
I just went to Ask a Scientist, and it says, can snakes regrow tails if they're cut in half? Snakes are generally unable to regenerate the tail end of their vertebrae. They are too specialized, like most mammals, to regrow tails.
So Billy was wrong.
Billy was wrong. Well, he burned down his house. He wasn't the fucking smartest person in the world.
No.
Watch him listen to this. I haven't talked to this son of a bitch since he was 12. He's gonna look me up and sue me for slander.
But it's a fact that they burned down his house, right?
Yeah, but I called him a dumb son of a bitch. That's slander.
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not?
No.
Oh.
No. If you say, like, he likes to suck the cocks of transvestite hookers, you'd have to prove that's true.
Huh.
In case you do some slander. That's the problem with slander, is, you know, you don't have to prove it's not true if you're the one being slandered, but the people that are slanderizing you have to prove that it's true.
Well, fuck them. Let's go watch Snakes on a Plane.
Got snakes on your internet.
I want these motherfucking snakes off my motherfucking podcast.